bird flu has hit Ohio hard in recent months. So what impact has that had on the poultry industry in Ohio and the price we pay for eggs at the supermarket? Joining me now to discuss all that are Ohio Department of Agriculture Director Brian Baldridge. Thanks for being here, Brian.
Absolutely. Glad to be with you.
And Ohio State University Extension Agent and Assistant Professor Tim McDermott. Welcome, Tim.
Thanks also for having me.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on WBXU. I'm Lucy May. Brian, we heard earlier this month that Ohio leads the U.S. in cases of bird flu. Is that still the case?
That is. Some of our other states to the west have worked through this earlier in 2024 and have kind of moved out of it. But now it's unfortunately Ohio's turn, and it is impacting us tremendously.
And Brian, when did this strain of bird flu start appearing in the state?
Sure. And this has been a normal ongoing response. We've worked through this since 2022. And to put it in perspective, 2022 up until kind of Christmas Eve of 24, we had went through a couple spikes where we've seen some outbreaks, and we've had to depopulate some facilities, go through that process. And to put it in perspective, we had depopulated approximately in that span of time about 9.4 million poultry livestock. Christmas Eve 24 hit, and from that date until today, unfortunately, we've had a huge uptick. We've had pushing 60 locations of outbreaks, and the number is currently over 10 million birds. So to kind of put it in context, as far as this is kind of a major hit, we're feeling it from the agricultural community, our agricultural producers, mainly isolated in Western Ohio. So, but we're working through that. We've prepared for this for a number of years with the industry, with USDA, and of course the Ohio Department of Agriculture, and preparing, you know, from a standpoint, preparing for the worst and hoping for the best.
And Brian, where did this come from? Is this being transmitted from wild birds? How did all these Ohio chickens get sick all of a sudden?
Sure. As we look at the migratory bird pathways and patterns, that's where we see this transmission coming. The poultry industry and even backyard poultry producers have done a lot of work. The industry has done tremendous work in really looking at biosecurity, making sure that wild bird does not enter into their facilities. We know that geese patterns moving from north to south carry this disease, and that's the unfortunate. We had a detection. We had some geese that we had a die-off of geese in the first part of December at Grand Lake St. Mary's, which is just north of this geographic area in the state of Dark and Mercer counties, where the impact is tremendous. And so our red flag was up. We were monitoring, and unfortunately, we started having those first cases, and we've been busy with cases ever since. Mm.
Tim, what impact is this having on the state's agriculture industry, on the poultry industry specifically?
So really, the industry side is not where I spend the majority of my time. I will refer industry clients to Director Baldridge or the Ohio Poultry Association. I'm mostly in the backyard community, so I work with backyard producers and small farmers, as well as support our OSU Extension's 4-H program. We have over 16,380 poultry livestock fair projects every year, and there's some uncertainty. We're having to implement biosecurity, just like Director Baldridge said. We are able to get the word out through extension to all 88 counties with our program area distribution. And we're talking to those backyard producers or their 4-H kiddos on, you can really make a big difference if you're practicing great biosecurity, which is the concept of preventing the entry of disease into the flock. So we talked to them about a coop and a run that is secure, not just from predators, but from other birds, other wildlife that can get in there. If you have, you know, maybe a farm pond or you have water on the property, make sure your birds can't interact there with the migratory waterfall, the geese and the ducks, because that's where the shedding is. And realize that you're not going to be able to see the disease ahead of time, right? You can't see bacteria or viruses. So you have to make those biosecurity engagements just part of how you work with your animals.
Wow, Tim, we will get to the industry side with you, Brian, but Tim, I hadn't even thought about all these little 4-H kids who are raising baby chicks for all these projects. I mean, are you hearing concerns from them, from their teachers, from their parents about all this?
Yeah, I would say that I am. I mean, there's probably nobody on the planet more resilient or innovative than a 4-H youth. And so they take it pretty well in stride. But this is the time of year when they're planning their year and they're purchasing their animals and they're getting ready to gear up for fair season and all of those things. And so what we've been doing is creating a whole bunch of outreach to provide that level of knowledge that they're going to need to keep their animals safe, the backyard flock safe. We just had a great webinar that we did earlier last month with Ohio Poultry Association and with Ohio Department of Agriculture to start the process of let's do our 2025 planning and let's make it the safest year we can have.
Well, Brian, let's come back to you to talk a little bit more about the impact this is having on the state's agriculture industry. I mean, you mentioned all the chickens that have had to be euthanized or depopulated over the past few months. What is that doing for farmers?
Well, it is very impactful to the ag industry. And you need to think about these farmers. As a farmer myself, you know, we care about our livestock. And then to wake up in the morning and realize if you've had a positive test. And we follow USDA guidelines for how to handle these type of responses. And unfortunately, it is depopulating and quarantining that site, making sure that any movement does not occur off of that site of infected birds, any movement of manure or anything like that that could carry the virus, just trying to contain and kind of stomp it out per se. So the impact that goes on as we go through a facility that has to be depopulated is very hard on our industry, not only financially, but also mentally. Again, the farmers, we love our livestock. You know, it's part of our daily way of life. And so it is impactful, but going through the process of depopulating and composting on site and going through that, we work collaboratively, Ohio Department of Agriculture with USDA and of course the Ohio Poultry Association has done so much work in preparing for this. And, you know, it's one of those things we just work through it on a daily basis and we hope the end is very soon in sight.
We're talking about bird flu, the impact it's having on Ohio's agriculture industry and the price of eggs. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. So, Tim, I don't know if this is something you feel like you can tackle or if this is one for Brian, but what has this meant for the price of eggs? There's been a lot of talk about how expensive eggs are right now. This has to be a pretty big factor.
Well, yeah, I would agree with that. It's not a process that we can super speed up. So if there's a barn that's infected and the birds are depopulated, then the barn has to be sterilized. But it takes a little over 5 months to grow a chick into a laying hen. And so OPA and ODA and USDA are doing the best job that they can. It's simply a matter of getting the barns back up and into production safely so that we can get more eggs into stores, and that will go a long way towards lowering prices.
Brian, do you hear a lot of concern from farmers after, you know, they've had to depopulate their flocks, which is difficult not only financially, but as you said, emotionally, is the next concern, how do I get back into this business?
Absolutely. And you know, we are fortunate, you know, that there's a USDA opportunity for indemnity. So, you know, if that wasn't there and that financial support was not in place from the federal government for USDA, I mean, this would be catastrophic for our producers. So this does give them the opportunity to be able to get back up into production, you know, once that facility, you know, it's deeply cleaned, it's disinfected. And then actually we swab and test those sites before they're being repopulated to make sure that there's no live virus. And actually let the sites set for an additional 12 days, which is two incubation periods of the bird flu, just to make sure that those sites are up and ready to go. And that's the key, is getting them back into production. The poultry industry does great work in just thinking through laying baby chicks, raising pullets, having that next generation of production ready to go. So the cycle is there, and it can be repopulated very quickly, but we just have to kind of get through this outbreak as we're dealing with today.
Talk to us a little bit more, Brian, about what it takes to sterilize a barn. That sounds like it can be a complicated process.
Yeah, it is. And we think about these facilities. Some of these are pretty large capacity facilities. So, we have to go through and literally deep clean. And that's all particles removed out of that. And then, we're using best practices, the scientific practices from a disinfecting process. And then, the key component, as I mentioned, was literally going through swabbing. It's unique to think about it at the Ohio Department of Agriculture. Our Animal Disease Diagnostic Lab is the first line of defense from laboratory testing here in Ohio. And, they're not only getting those tests from farmers, producers who are seeing signs and symptoms in their barns. And that sign and symptom could be off feed, off water, even walking into a poultry barn and the chickens or turkeys become more docile and quiet. Usually when somebody walks into a poultry barn, they're chirping at you pretty loud, and they can, the farmers and producers, because they're constantly monitoring their stock, they can tell silent, subtle differences, and they start testing. And those tests are sent to our lab as well. And then, so realizing that we are making sure as we clean, but also in the detection side, all those tests that come through our animal disease diagnostic lab located in Reynoldsburg at the Ohio Department of Agriculture.
Okay. We do have a caller on the line. Hi, Elizabeth. Thanks so much for your call. What's your question?
Hello. You were just talking about getting testing done, and I wasn't sure I heard who the contact person was, how you would contact if you have a small backyard flock. But my other question is, what about the Canadian geese who like to hang out where there's a pond? There's a lot of public land where these geese are, and they just stay there because when it's not too cold around here. And aren't they a source or, a reservoir for the virus?
Thank you, Elizabeth. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but let's approach those two questions. Tim, let's start with you. What about backyard flocks? Can people call or contact someone to get tests for their backyard flocks?
So the recommendation is if you have concerns about your backyard flock and avian influenza, you would contact the Ohio Department of Agriculture. And that's at 614-728-6220. That is the Animal Disease Diagnostic Laboratory that Director Baldridge referenced. And then speaking to Canada geese and ducks and other migratory waterfowl, yeah, that would be a potential focus for infection. So you need to make sure that there's a biosecurity break between your flock and those birds. And that could be direct biosecurity. You definitely don't want your birds interacting with migratory waterfowl. But there's also indirect biosecurity where we have another focus of infection that could bring that into the coop or the run, and that would be the people. If you're walking through that park and you're walking through areas where there might have been virus shed and you're not practicing biosecurity with a change of clothes or shoe covers or a foot bath, you could potentially track the virus into your flock unknowingly because, like I said, you can't see it. You just have to make sure you're doing your level best to prevent entry of bacteria and viruses.
So if you walk through goose droppings or duck droppings, essentially you could end up infecting your backyard flock if then you go into their coop.
Potentially, the virus is shed in secretions. That would be nasal secretions, saliva, and feces.
Okay. Well, that is great advice. Thank you so much for that call, Elizabeth. What about for a preventative test? I mean, a lot of us take COVID tests to make sure we don't have the COVID-19. If we have the sniffles, is there a preventative test that you can give your chickens if they seem okay, but you just want to make sure, Brian?
Not really. And I would add one more layer. Tim had great comments there as far as contacting our labs directly or our animal health division, but also your local vet. If you have that relationship with your local veterinary, they can give you some advice and talk through that if you have other animals and have that relationship. So that's another level of answering questions for especially our backyard flocks, our folks who have those, few hens and they enjoy that, or there are 4-H'ers. I love what Tim said. 4-H'er FFA myself. I'm going to give him a plug. And I love. Grew up in that, and I raised my kids through 4-H and FFA, and I'm looking to the next generation being my three little grandbabies, the oldest being Aubrey, who's 4, who's just around the corner for participating in 4-H and FFA, and it's such a wonderful opportunity. And the work Tim does is not only just on the farms and it's the farm kids. There are so many urban opportunities for 4-H and FFA, which is just exciting, and OSU's done great work in that space.
Yeah. Well, we will continue our conversation about bird flu after a short break, and later in the program, we'll discuss how pediatricians can talk with families about gun safety. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about bird flu and its impact on Ohio's agriculture industry and the price of eggs. My guests are Ohio Department of Agriculture Director Brian Baldridge and Ohio State University Extension Educator and Assistant Professor Tim McDermott. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Brian, we've talked a lot about how poultry farmers have had to depopulate their flocks, how the different sanitary measures that they take to get their production back up and running. But I want to make sure we talk about how safe are eggs to eat? I mean, some people might be worried, what if I get some eggs that came from a flock before it was detected? How safe are eggs in Ohio these days?
Absolutely safe. Our agricultural products, and of course, we have to say cooked at proper temperatures, and we've said that for years, but they're absolutely safe. As we look at this disease and realize the impact, this is a livestock to livestock issue, the transmission working through the animals themselves. So in this case, the poultry. So, but when it comes to, our food products and as I said earlier, as a farmer myself, and we care about our livestock. We care about a high quality, safe product into the retail space. That's what we love to do. We love to feed Ohioans. We love to feed the world. And we're proud of that. But it is very safe. No concerns from that standpoint. Cooked at proper temperatures. I had a wonderful omelet for breakfast this morning.
Good plug for the omelet there.
Yes.
Tim, we were talking earlier about backyard flocks and how you've been advising people about that. What concerns are you hearing? And can you talk a little bit more about the recommendations that you're putting out there in terms of making sure backyard flocks don't interact with wild migratory birds?
So the concerns that I am hearing are a lot of what we've been having in our discussions today. And so I want to give a big shout out to you for giving us this forum to talk about this and answer questions and provide the links and information. We have 4-H kiddos that they're worried that they might have some impact on their fares, but we don't know that. So we talk about, let's do our level best to keep all of our birds safe, raise them up healthy. We have tons of content that we can share. There is a website called the Poultry Team website at OSU Extension, where I have hosted the fact sheets and webinars and social media videos that we've created with Ohio Department of Agriculture and Ohio Poultry Association, as well as a list of veterinarians that see poultry in Ohio. I think what Director Baldridge said is really important. You can work with your veterinarian, make sure you have your veterinary client-patient relationship in place so they can answer the questions that you have for them. And it's accessed at a really easy Go link to remember, which is go.osu.edu/HPAI for all of that information.
Okay. We do have another caller on the line. Hi, Joan. Thank you so much for calling. What's your question or comment?
I just want to know if a dog can get bird flu from association with wild geese droppings, including having them as a nibble. It's disgusting, but yeah.
It happens. Yeah. Well, thank you. And thank you for putting that so delicately. We appreciate that. Brian, are you familiar with that? I know that pets and veterinary activity isn't what you focus on, but I imagine that's a question that has been coming up a lot.
Absolutely. And I'd be glad to touch on that from a standpoint, what we look, as we see, or if you would see wild geese, we don't, even as humans, we shouldn't go up, or wild birds that have passed, that have died. We don't want that direct contact, and we won't want that for our animals as well. There's really very little to no impact. Although there has been a couple transmissions because of animals being contained in one area where there was a poultry death. And then example, it was a pig. And of course, pigs are very curious. And, they were messing and biting, tearing, and so forth on that carcass. So it was a positive test from that animal. But it takes direct contact. But use caution as we think about us as humans washing hands. We just don't want to expose our animals unnecessarily to that type of situation as we work through this outbreak.
Do you have any other thoughts on that, Tim? I guess I wonder, Joan was talking about not even interacting with a dead bird, but interacting with droppings. That's something that a dog might get into. I mean, cats might get into dead birds or interacting even with mice that have somehow picked up the virus. Is that something people should be concerned about?
That question was, and I'm sorry, it's an interesting question to me, because when bird flu first occurred, I had a lot of colleagues and clients reach out to me, and they were talking about, what do we do now? What do we do now? And quite honestly, I was like, well, you do the same things that you should have been doing before bird flu, because there's tons of other diseases that are out there that they can get from other wild birds. And so, when she was talking about the dog might eat goose droppings, that could make a dog sick just from eating goose droppings. You can get pancreatitis or any number of other GI disturbances. So, biosecurity is not just for highly pathogenic avian influenza. It is really the prevention of disease transmission within a flock or a herd, even if it's one animal like your dog. And so the techniques that we use in biosecurity for keeping our flock safe for highly pathogenic avian influenza actually are great techniques to use for keeping lots of other animal species safe from lots of other diseases as well.
Okay. Thank you for that question, Joan. We appreciate it. Tim, are there other precautions people can take if they have backyard flocks? What about netting, or what are some things people can do to try to really keep their flocks safe?
So that's a great question. And honestly, it starts when you are just thinking about getting your birds. I recommend, and the Ohio Poultry Association and ODA recommend, you get your birds from what's known as NPIP approved hatcheries, which is the National Poultry Improvement Plan. That is a plan designed to make sure that the stock of birds, your chicks, are getting are going to be the healthiest that they can be. And then the knowledge about the rules and regulations for keeping birds. It's not really standardized throughout Ohio. Each city or municipality has their own rules or regulations. And then learning about the basic husbandry of keeping birds, and the nutrition and the diseases and the biosecurity and things like that are really important. And especially as we see more and more people want to keep backyard poultry for eggs or for meat or 4-H kiddos for show, knowledge goes a long way. So start with healthy stock, learn as much as you can about that ahead of time, make sure you are keeping your birds safely, and responsibility is going to go a long way.
Brian, we were talking about the price of eggs earlier, just how long it takes to start over with a flock if for farmers who have had to depopulate their flocks. Do you expect, because of that, that prices could continue to increase for eggs, or is there an end in sight for this?
Well, I'm a very glass half full type of person, so I am hoping the end is very soon, and we are not having to worry about the prices that the retailers see on a daily basis. So as we work through this and we think about what we do in agriculture, and as the price, as farmers, as producers, we're kind of price takers. We don't set those retail prices. We are given a price for our product, and then it moves into the retail side of it. And those prices are set through the industry versus supply and demand.
And Brian, I've heard members of the public should alert state officials if they come across dead wild birds, but there are lots of reasons birds die. How do people know when they should call?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you kind of got to evaluate each case on its own merit. And we have a great relationship, a collaboration between agencies, the Ohio ODNR, the Ohio Wildlife Division of Wildlife, and they are kind of monitoring that side of this when it comes to wildlife. We're doing testing for them as they receive calls and concerns. You know, it's kind of an evaluated process of figuring out, is this a high risk? And then the testing process will take place at that point to evaluate where they have HPAI.
Okay. Well, I've been talking with Ohio Department of Agriculture Director Brian Baldridge and Ohio State University Extension Educator and Assistant Professor Tim McDermott. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
Thank you so much.
Up next, we'll discuss how pediatricians can talk with families about gun safety. This is Cincinnati Edition.